Chapter 62. A burning brand. All at once the thought came into my mind, I have not sought out Mr. Brown. Upon that text I desire to depart from the direct line of my subject, and make a little excursion. I wish to reveal a secret which I have carried with me 9 years, and which has become burdensome. Upon a certain occasion, 9 years ago, I had said, with strong feeling, if ever I see St. Louis again, I will seek out Mr. Brown, the great grain merchant, and ask of him the privilege of shaking him by the hand. The occasion and the circumstances were as follows. A friend of mine, a clergyman, came one evening and said, I have a most remarkable letter here, which I want to read to you, if I can do it without breaking down. I must preface it with some explanations, however. The letter is written by an ex-thief and ex-vagabond of the lowest origin and basest rearing, a man all stained with crime and steeped in ignorance. But, thank God, with a mine of pure gold hidden away in him, as you shall see. His letter is written to a burglar named Williams, who is serving a 9-year term in a certain state prison, for burglary. Williams was a particularly daring burglar, and plied that trade during a number of years, but he was caught at last and jailed, to await trial in a town, where he had broken into a house at night, pistol in hand, and forced the owner, to hand over to him $8,000 in government bonds. Williams was not a common sort of person, by any means. He was a graduate of Harvard College, and came of good New England stock. His father was a clergyman. While lying in jail, his health began to fail, and he was threatened with consumption. This fact, together with the opportunity for reflection afforded by solitary confinement, had its natural effect. He fell into serious thought. His early training asserted itself with power, and wrought with strong influence upon his mind and heart. He put his old life behind him, and became an earnest Christian. Some ladies in the town heard of this, visited him, and by their encouraging words supported him in his good resolutions, and strengthened him to continue in his new life. The trial ended in his conviction and sentence to the state prison for the term of 9 years, as I have before said. In the prison he became acquainted with the poor wretch referred to in the beginning of my talk, Jack Hunt, the writer of the letter which I am going to read. You will see that the acquaintanceship bore fruit for Hunt. When Hunt's time was out, he wandered to St. Louis, and from that place he wrote his letter to Williams. The letter got no further than the office of the prison warden. Of course, prisoners are not often allowed to receive letters from outside. The prison authorities read this letter, but did not destroy it. They had not the heart to do it. They read it to several persons, and eventually it fell into the hands of those ladies, of whom I spoke a while ago. The other day I came across an old friend of mine, a clergyman, who had seen this letter, and was full of it. The mere remembrance of it so moved him, that he could not talk of it without his voice breaking. He promised to get a copy of it for me, and here it is, an exact copy, with all the imperfections of the original preserved. It has many slang expressions in it, thieves' argot, but their meaning has been interlined, in parentheses, by the prison authorities, St. Louis, June 9, 1872. Mr. W., friend Charlie, if I may call you so. I know you are surprised to get a letter from me, but I hope you won't be mad at my writing to you. I want to tell you my thanks for the way you talked to me when I was in prison. It has led me to try and be a better man. I guess you thought I did not care for what you said, and at the first go off I didn't, but I knowed you was a man who had done big work with good men and want no sucker, nor want gassing, and all the boys nodded. I used to think at night what you said, and for it I knocked off swearing months before my time was up, for I saw it want no good. No ho, the day my time was up you told me, if I would shake the cross, quit stealing, and live on the square for months, it would be the best job I ever done in my life. The state agent gave me a ticket to here, and on the car I thought more of what you said to me, but didn't make up my mind. When we got to Chicago on the cars from there to here, I pulled off an old woman's leather, robbed her of her pocketbook. I hadn't no more than got it off when I wished I hadn't done it. For a while before that I made up my mind to be a square bloke, for months on your word, but forgot it when I saw the leather was a grip easy to get. But I kept close to her, and when she got out of the cars at a way place I said, "Marm, have you lost anything?" And she tumbled, discovered her leather was off, gone. "Is this it?" says I, giving it to her. "Well, if you ain't honest," says she, but I hadn't got cheek enough to stand that sort of talk, so I left her in a hurry. When I got here I had $1.25 left, and I didn't get no work for 3 days, as I ain't strong enough for a roustabout on a steamboat for a deckhand. The afternoon of the third day I spent my last 10 CTS for Moon's large round sea biscuit and cheese, and I felt pretty rough, and was thinking I would have to go on the dipe picking pockets again, when I thought of what he once said about a fellow's calling on the Lord when he was in hard luck, and I thought I would try it once anyhow. But when I tried it I got stuck on the start, and all I could get off was, "Lord, give a poor fellow a chance to square it for 3 months for Christ's sake, amen." And I kept a thinking of it over and over as I went along. About an hour after that I was in Fort Saint, and this is what happened, and is the cause of my being where I am now, and about which I will tell you before I get done writing. As I was walking along, heard a big noise, and saw a horse running away with a carriage with two children in it, and I grabbed up a piece of box cover from the sidewalk, and run in the middle of the street, and when the horse came up I smashed him over the head as hard as I could drive. The board split to pieces, and the horse checked up a little, and I grabbed the reins, and pulled his head down until he stopped. The gentleman what owned him came running up, and soon as he saw the children were all right, he shook hands with me, and gave me a $50 greenback, and my asking the Lord to help me come into my head, and I was so thunderstruck. I couldn't drop the reins, nor say nothing. He saw something was up, and coming back to me said, "My boy, are you hurt?" And the thought come into my head just then to ask him for work, and I asked him to take back the bill and give me a job. Says he, "Jump in here, and let's talk about it, but keep the money." He asked me if I could take care of horses, and I said yes, for I used to hang round livery stables, and often would help clean and drive horses. He told me he wanted a man for that work, and would give me $16 a month and board me. You bet I took that chance at once. That night in my little room over the stable I sat a long time thinking over my past life, and of what had just happened, and I just got down on my knees, and thanked the Lord for the job, and to help me to square it, and to bless you for putting me up to it. And the next morning I done it again, and got me some new togs, clothes, and a Bible, for I made up my mind, after what the Lord had done for me I would read the Bible every night and morning, and ask him to keep an eye on me. When I had been there about a week, Mr. Brown, that's his name, came in my room one night, and saw me reading the Bible. He asked me if I was a Christian, and I told him no. He asked me how it was I read the Bible instead of papers and books. Well, Charlie, I thought I had better give him a square deal in the start, so I told him all about my being in prison and about you, and how I had almost done give up looking for work, and how the Lord got me the job when I asked him. And the only way I had to pay him back was to read the Bible and square it, and I asked him to give me a chance for 3 months. He talked to me like a father for a long time, and told me I could stay, and then I felt better than ever I had done in my life, for I had given Mr. Brown a fair start with me, and now I didn't fear no one giving me a back cap, exposing his past life, and running me off the job. The next morning he called me into the library, and gave me another square talk, and advised me to study some every day, and he would help me 1 or 2 hours every night, and he gave me arithmetic, a spelling, book, a geography and a writing book, and he hears me every night. He lets me come into the house to prayers every morning, and got me put in a Bible class in the Sunday school, which I likes very much, for it helps me to understand my Bible better. Now, Charlie, the 3 months on the square are up 2 months ago, and as you said, it is the best job I ever did in my life, and I commenced another of the same sort right away, only it is to God helping me to last a lifetime. Charlie, I wrote this letter to tell you I do think God has forgiven my sins and heard your prayers, for you told me you should pray for me. I know I love to read his word, and tell him all my troubles, and he helps me I know, for I have plenty of chances to steal, but I don't feel to as I once did, and now I take more pleasure in going to church than to the theater. And that wasn't so once. Our minister and others often talk with me, and a month ago they wanted me to join the church, but I said no, not now. I may be mistaken in my feelings, I will wait a while, but now I feel that God has called me, and on the first Sunday in July I will join the church. Dear friend, I wish I could write to you as I feel, but I can't do it, yet you know I learned to read and write while prisons, and I ain't got well enough along to write as I would talk. I know I ain't spelled all the words right in this and lots of other mistakes, but you will excuse it I know, for you know I was brought up in a poor house until I run away, and that I never knew who my father and mother was, and I don't know my right name, and I hope you won't be mad at me, but I have as much right to one name as another, and I have taken your name, for you won't use it when you get out I know, and you are the man I think most of in the world. So I hope you won't be mad. I am doing well. I put $10 a month in bank with $25 of the $50. If you ever want any or all of it, let me know, and it is yours. I wish you would let me send you some now. I send you with this a receipt for a year of Little's living age. I didn't know what you would like, and I told Mr. Brown, and he said he thought you would like it. I wish I was near you so I could send you Chuck refreshments on holidays. It would spoil this weather from here, but I will send you a box next Thanksgiving anyway. Next week Mr. Brown takes me into his store as light porter, and will advance me. As soon as I know a little more, he keeps a big granary store, wholesale. I forgot to tell you of my mission school, Sunday school class. The school is in the Sunday afternoon. I went out two Sunday afternoons, and picked up 7 kids, little boys, and got them to come in. 2 of them knew as much as I did, and I had them put in a class where they could learn something. I don't know much myself, but as these kids can't read, I get on nicely with them. I make sure of them by going after them every Sunday hour before school time. I also got 4 girls to come. Tell Mac and Harry about me. If they will come out here when their time is up, I will get them jobs at once. I hope you will excuse this long letter and all mistakes. I wish I could see you, for I can't write as I would talk. I hope the warm weather is doing your lungs good. I was afraid when you was bleeding you would die. Give my respects to all the boys, and tell them how I am doing. I am doing well, and everyone here treats me as kind as they can. Mr. Brown is going to write to you sometime. I hope someday you will write to me. This letter is from your very true friend, C.W., who you know as Jack Hunt. I send you Mr. Brown's card. Send my letter to him. Here was true eloquence, irresistible eloquence, and without a single grace or ornament to help it out. I have seldom been so deeply stirred by any piece of writing. The reader of it halted, all the way through, on a lame and broken voice, yet he had tried to fortify his feelings by several private readings of the letter, before venturing into company with it. He was practicing upon me to see if there was any hope of his being able to read the document to his prayer meeting with anything like a decent command over his feelings. The result was not promising. However, he determined to risk it, and did. He got through tolerably well, but his audience broke down early, and stayed in that condition to the end. The fame of the letter spread through the town. A brother minister came and borrowed the manuscript, put it bodily into a sermon, preached the sermon to 1,200 people on the Sunday morning, and the letter drowned them in their own tears. Then my friend put it into a sermon, and went before his Sunday morning congregation with it. It scored another triumph. The house wept as one individual. My friend went on summer vacation up into the fishing regions of our northern British neighbors, and carried this sermon with him, since he might possibly chance to need a sermon. He was asked to preach, one day. The little church was full. Among the people present were the late Dr. J.G. Holland, the late Mr. Seymour of the New York Times, apostrophe Mr. Page, the philanthropist and temperance advocate, and, I think, Senator Fry, of Maine. The marvelous letter did its wonted work. All the people were moved, all the people wept. The tears flowed in a steady stream down Dr. Holland's cheeks, and nearly the same can be said with regard to all who were there. Mr. Page was so full of enthusiasm over the letter that he said he would not rest until he made pilgrimage to that prison, and had speech with the man who had been able to inspire a fellow unfortunate to write so priceless a tract. Ah, that unlucky Page! And another man. If they had only been in Jericho, that letter would have run through the world, and stirred all the hearts of all the nations for 1,000 years to come, and nobody might ever have found out that it was the confoundedest, brazenest, ingeniousest piece of fraud and humbuggery that was ever concocted to fool poor confiding mortals with. The letter was a pure swindle, and that is the truth. And take it by and large, it was without a compeer among swindles. It was perfect, it was rounded, symmetrical, complete, colossal. The reader learns it at this point, but we didn't learn it till some miles and weeks beyond this stage of the affair. My friend came back from the woods, and he and other clergymen and lay missionaries began once more to inundate audiences with their tears, and the tears of said audiences. I begged hard for permission to print the letter in a magazine, and tell the watery story of its triumphs. Numbers of people got copies of the letter, with permission to circulate them in writing, but not in print. Copies were sent to the Sandwich Islands and other far regions. Charles Dudley Warner was at church, one day, when the worn letter was read and wept over. At the church door, afterward, he dropped a peculiarly cold iceberg down the clergyman's back with the question, "Do you know that letter to be genuine?" It was the first suspicion that had ever been voiced, but it had that sickening effect which first uttered suspicions against one's idol always have. Some talk followed, "Why, what should make you suspect that it isn't genuine?" Nothing that I know of, except that it is too neat, and compact, and fluent, and nicely put together for an ignorant person, an unpracticed hand. I think it was done by an educated man. The literary artist had detected the literary machinery. If you will look at the letter now, you will detect it yourself. It is observable in every line. Straightway the clergyman went off, with the seed of suspicion sprouting in him, and wrote to a minister residing in that town, where Williams had been jailed and converted, asked for light, and also asked if a person in the literary line, meaning me, might be allowed to print the letter and tell its history. He presently received this answer, "Rev. My dear friend, in regard to that convict's letter there can be no doubt as to its genuineness. Williams, to whom it was written, lay in our jail and professed to have been converted, and Rev. Mr. the chaplain, had great faith in the genuineness of the change as much as one can have in any such case. The letter was sent to one of our ladies, who is a Sunday school teacher, sent either by Williams himself, or the chaplain of the state's prison, probably, as he has been greatly annoyed in having so much publicity." Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.